Brock Glover, here we are. Bercy Supercross, the launch of JT Racing, the launch of JT Racing new. And you're part of the team. How's that feel? What do you think about when it first came back? When they came to you, said, Brock Glover, coming back with JT. What'd you think?
Well, I always thought it was a great thing, actually, because, I mean, JT Racing is such a big name in the sport, such a long history in the sport. It was really the pioneer of what current riding gear is all about. And, you know, so when they, you know, I have to honestly admit there was a time when JT disappeared for a while. It crossed my mind of, you know, what it would take.
Yeah.
And I actually had some business meetings with different people to say, you know, we could bring this thing back. At that point, you know, the name had been purchased by a few other people and it would have cost too much to get it back. But once David Dre and a couple of his partners put this program together, had a few meetings with him, at first I was a little skeptical of it.
Yeah.
And after I realized these guys are really passionate about it and the reasons for doing it, you know, for the brand and for the whole sport, it was right. It was really, truly driven by passion. I mean, did it make a lot of business sense? Maybe not. Honestly, in this economy, maybe right. It didn't make a lot of business sense. But I knew their passion was there, and because of that, I knew, you know, that they would try to do it the right way, and they really have. They've come up with a nice product. Mm-hmm. Some people, they're just bringing a retro look back. But, you know, that was – I think the future of JT at this point is more exciting even than what – I mean, as excited as I am about it now,
yeah.
The future of it, I know what's in store for 2012 and 13, and I think even it's even going to get better and some of the new stuff is going to blow you away.
I think, too, what's a little bit lost is, you know, I've got – my brother's got a set and mm-hmm. a buddy of mine's got a set. It's quality gear. It's made well. Mm-hmm. It's a high-end set of gear. They've done a good job.
Yeah, it is. It's a premium brand. They didn't bring in an entry-level product at all. It is a premium brand of product with technological innovations in there. You know, I know MotoVert, one of the biggest magazines in France, just got an editor's choice. It's their magazine's choice of the best pant. And that was a pretty exciting news to hear when we got over here. Mm-hmm. So. You know, it is. It's a top-level premium brand. It's certainly not a price point product.
Right. Now, you, San Diego, six-time AMA champion, John Arita Gregory, based out of San Diego. So for you, when you were coming up, natural choice just to wear JT? I mean, just from location?
Absolutely. You know, it was kind of a hometown thing, little homeboy thing. And I actually, you know, started wearing JT well before I was a factory rider. So as an amateur rider in the area, I was lucky enough to know a few people that knew John and Rita. Went down and met them almost, you know, at that point. Almost as a second parent to a group of mine. I've been friends with them ever since, and this was, you know, a year or two before I ever even signed a factory contract. So I was wearing JT well before I was a factory rider.
Right. You know, I feel like it came to prominence with Hannah a little bit, and then Lachine's got his Bad Bones and his Dalmatians. Bale uh-huh. was known for – but to me, as a kid – Brock Glover meant JT. Do you know what I mean? Do you feel like you needed some signature like Glover stuff? Like I always feel like you were the guy that I first remember making JT cool.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I was wearing, you know, JT well before Bob was or any of these guys.
Yeah.
And I always felt like, well, you know, Bob.
Okay, so I'm right, though. You're lost in the mix a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, a little bit in the beginning of it. I always tease John Gregory because I always feel like, hey, you have kind of a revisionist history there, like who came first here and who was wearing the stuff. But, you know, myself, I'm even like with Martin – in my era, really, local San Diego, the Marty Smith, you know, our first – you know, he was the first superstar of motocross, you know, and winning the 74, 75 national champion, being a San Diego guy. That's right when I first started racing motocross. So, and Marty kind of started wearing a few JT items and then continued further and further into it. So he was even well before the Bob Hanna, and even like a Danny Laporte was well before the Bob Hanna era. And then Bob went on to his own gear.
Yeah.
So it is kind of funny, you know, and I think John, I always kind of chuckle at it. It's like, you know, there wasn't as long of a history, but there was also a lot of ad campaign, and Bob was winning a lot of races, so he obviously deserved the publicity. But
you needed like the golden boy line.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
Well, that conversation came up with one of the business partners here today, and I was telling him about the guy walked into the press conference with a set of a rainbow kind of a jacket, a retro jacket. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of cool to see these people busting out their retro gear to come to the press conference today. But the rainbow was – I designed that rainbow.
Okay, yeah.
And I was telling him, I was sitting down. We were having lunch at a restaurant, and I literally drew it out on a napkin.
That's funny.
And handed it to John and Rita. And I said, you know, and – I'm not going to take, you know, I'm not the most creative person, but this rainbow gear that I came out, it was inspired by the colors of my boat, my new ski boat. And I thought, oh, this is really cool. Right. You know, a group of colors, kind of a rainbow thing. And this is, it was well before the rainbow symbol became prominent in elsewhere, but
it's the 70s, man.
It was 70s. About 20 years earlier, or too early. But the rainbow gear, it was actually funny because Paul Cortez, who later on became the Honda, they drove around the Honda semi. It was his dad's restaurant, that little restaurant down Chula Vista we used to frequent. And JT, we'd go have lunch there with John and Rita, and that's where I drew that design, was on a napkin.
Yeah, and unlike, again, Bailey's Flow Orange, another guy that's sort of known for it. To me, your number 44 pink and blue cyan stuff with the helmet and the chest pro, one of the best looks to me of JT.
Yeah, I did like that. That was in the latter part of my career. Right. But I think a lot of, you know, I still, you know, obviously a lot of people remember busting out the pink gear. And that was kind of wild at the time, too. Other people, a little bit before that, I was one of the first guys to wear white. And that was, and funny, I credit John R. with my old mechanic with that, because he had figured out a way to, he was thinking one day and had decided to paint the roof of our box van all white to reflect the sun. And
typical
John R. Literally
Windexed his glasses and then thought about a white roof.
Windexed his glasses, cleaned his glasses, Windexed his forehead too, you know, because he's got to get the oil off. And then he walked around and he had a thermometer with a barometer, and he was checking barometric pressures, and he's checking everything. So Professor was doing that, and he would put the thermometer in our truck. And then he would put the thermometer in the next guy's truck, and it was, you know, Bowen's or whoever's. He would check everybody's temperatures of our truck, and the truck that he had painted the roof of it white was 3 to 4 degrees cooler on a hot day in the Nationals. And he was always saying,
"That is
this
so
crazy
funny."
Just before the USGP in 1981, he says, "Hey, you ought to during the summer here, you should paint your helmet white." And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, you should get a white helmet. And you're thinking, white helmet, that's what people buy out of the box. The first thing you do, you paint it.
Right.
And, you know, we were still running yellow and black bikes, and to paint a white helmet didn't, you know, really didn't make sense. So that was where my first white helmet really kind of came about, was to try to just during the hot summer months to have cooler temperatures on your head. And then it led to the riding gear, and then it led to the vented gear and everything else in all white. And I remember telling John and Rita, I always had this idea because we were near San Diego SeaWorld, and I always wanted to do an ad. And I kept telling him, why don't you call the people at SeaWorld? I always wanted to do an ad in that vented gear and do it inside the penguin cage. And I always thought that would be the neatest ad, and it never got done. That was one of those ones that I was wishing.
I did a podcast with John that you helped set up maybe a couple years ago. One of the best ones I've done. Very interesting. A great guy to talk to. Do you yourself, what's your favorite JT product?
Boy,
like the either colorway or the line, or like,
that's a good question. You know? I thought what was really cool way back when I was a young kid, I guess this is when you're aspiring to be a factory star, I always thought the coolest thing is when they had their gloves that you could get custom painted, have your names on the cross.
I don't know
if you remember way back when, that you could have your name put on them. And I always thought that was the neatest thing. And I always used to get so bummed when you'd ride a supercross or something.
Yeah.
And you'd come inside of a corner and you would hit your hand on the – they used to literally put tires in the corners. Yeah. And you'd hit your knuckles on the tires going through a berm, and it would scrape the name.
Run it off.
It would smudge the name. And you're like, oh, man, I just had those – just got those. Yeah. And it wasn't like today where the guy – your riding gear guy would show up with a new set every time you're on the track. But I think that was a fun one. You know, I mean, there was a lot of stuff, and I always thought when they came out with the vented apparel, that was a nice thing too.
And you're one of the only guys, the pro guys, to run JT goggles when they came out.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I have a house up. There was a gentleman, a couple guys that helped design all those goggles. And I was very involved when they were starting to get injection molding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, went from making nylon pants and things like this in Finland and bringing them in to actually the technical side of things, where you're actually the injection molding of plastics, where the chest protectors were 1000s and the 2000s, mm-hmm. and these things started coming out. All during those prototype designs, obviously, I was very involved in developing those. The goggle was, you know, a natural fit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I liked it. They had a neat tear-off system and some other nice designs on it. But at that point, too, you know, contracts were kind of all-inclusive.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it made a lot more sense. You could get paid more money if you just did an all-inclusive contract from head mm-hmm. to toe.
Here we are, Bercy Supercross. Mm-hmm. You raced the very first one, 1984.
Well, good memory. Yes, it was, actually. Yeah. I think this is the 29th edition, I think, is what Xavier
said. So, same floor, same stadium? I mean, like...
Yeah, when we were here, the stadium was actually almost brand new.
Okay.
And one of the unique things about the stadium, too, is that it's got grass on the outside.
Yeah.
And my understanding at the time, we did some press for it, and they had us sitting on motorcycles outside it and riding up and down the stairs of all crazy things.
Yeah.
And watching these guys mow with a rope and a little hand mower, and they would lower the mower down from above, and they'd use a pulley to get it back up and do it over. And I asked, why do they bother growing grass on the side of a stadium like this? And they said, oh, because they wanted the environmentalists were really concerned about the eye line of it and how it looked, and you know, they wanted to make it look more part of nature, and mm-hmm. so that was it. But in 84 there was five Americans. Danny Laporte was still based mostly over here, but Danny rode, and then it was basically the two Honda guys of Johnny O'Mara and David Bailey, and then the two Yamaha guys of Rick Johnson and myself. And at that point we were, you know, four of the top Americans, if not, you know. And then so we came over and raced the first one, and it was more like a little arena cross, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It was exciting fans, crazy fans,
were they excited to see you guys? I mean,
we were just dumbfounded, because still we were laughing about it, because the fans show up. I mean, it's hard to describe to the American fan. And even Jean-Michel Bell, who was here, was sitting there. This man, guy brought by a chainsaw. He basically doesn't have the cutting apparatus on it, but it's the two-stroke engine. He has a set of a number plate on the thing, and he has us autographing the number plate. And these guys bring these things with no exhaust pipes, or they stick a megaphone where the exhaust pipe used to be to make it even louder. And Jean-Michel looks over at us and says, hey, could you imagine in America that you could get into a stadium carrying this chainsaw? And the answer is, of course not.
Yeah.
And they literally fire these chainsaws up and rev them full speed, and they have horns, and it's so loud in there.
Yeah.
Even as a rider, you could barely hear because the noise level is so high. Yeah.
How many years did you do it?
You know, I have to think back. I did the first one we did in 84, but it was in springtime.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of in the middle of our season, which we, you know, wasn't the best for everybody.
Right.
And then they did a second one the same year in the normal traditional fall.
Yeah.
And the second one, I think, was in the early December. And then, which now it's moved kind of like the Halloween weekend, October. But then again in 85, I think I did it again that year. And I don't remember all the years. I probably only raced it four or five, because one of those years I had an injury and I didn't ride, because it was in the fall. I think it was late 85, actually. So I must have rode both 84s and 86, 87, mm-hmm. towards the end there. And then maybe 88 and 89, I think, something.
Yeah. How's things at Dunlop? Your main job, Dunlop Tires. How's everything going with that?
It's good. We've been real busy and really working hard developing some new stuff for the 2012 Supercross season. It's been, it's always a big challenge. You know, we have a lot of riders and a lot of teams, but that's not so much the challenge as just, you know.
You're probably missing out on some tests right now.
really, I am, actually. And macroeconomics and things like that, I mean, you wouldn't think, as much as my job is to, try to get the best tires made, best performing tires,
right.
et cetera, testing, development. but we also have to consider, you know, what the cost of natural rubber is, what's the cost of oil, you know, what the dollar
– things people don't really think
about. Yeah, the dollar devaluation has hurt, you know, the budget that I'm in charge of, mm-hmm. the dollar devaluation has hurt more than any single thing. What the dollar used to be able to buy in Japanese yen versus what it buys today mm-hmm. is, you know, 25-30% less in a couple-year period of time. That hurts a lot, and so trying to stretch the budget and help as many of the teams as mm-hmm. as we can, because to me, I mean, Dunlop is, you know, been here for 35 years supporting the paddock, and you know, the more teams we can help, the better, because we need to keep the health. You know, we feel very responsible, or a part of the system, to keep the sport as healthy as we can during any downtimes.
Technical question for you. Ryan Villopoto switched to the 2012 Cowie 450, ripped off 5 out of 8 moto wins. Definitely a credit to his to the machine, I think. What changed tire-wise for him? Anything at all? Did you know, new frame? He credited the new frame, but how did that affect you guys? Did you have to do a little more R&D with that bike, or was it same old, same old?
You know, that was an easy switch for us, which is funny, because it's been interesting, you know, and I think I've mentioned this before, when other riders have maybe switched from brand. Mm-hmm. You know, a rider, a high status, let's say a Chad Reed, for instance, he had a tire that he ran on the Kawasaki that was his best tire on the Kawasaki. And then when he switched to the Honda, that no longer was his favorite tire,
right.
And not even, you know, and it's not even his number two tire. He switched to other tires. So the bikes do make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan Villopoto has been, he's been exceptionally easy. I think he gets comfortable with a setup, and to his credit, he kind of sticks with that, and he has no surprises anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He does switch around here and there if the track gets real hard.
Yeah.
He'll run a more hard pack tire. But Ryan and the funny part about this is that the Pro Circuit team is another Kawasaki team that tends to run pretty much the same front tire as Ryan. So maybe it's a Kawasaki, and they end up a lot on the MX-51, and it's a standard tire and a standard pattern, standard size and everything, mm-hmm. which is, it's interesting that our MX-51 right. works real well on the Kawasaki.
Is it just me, or did the 90 front tire lose its popularity? Still used, but did it, you know, for a few years there, it was 90 or nothing else, sidewall height. Is it just me, or does that seem to be coming back down?
No, it's that was true. The tracks have also changed.
Okay.
And this is the interesting part, that the tracks have changed a lot. The team that puts together Dirtworks and the particularly in the Supercross, we have a lot less pure hard pack tracks. I mean, we used to even have more hard pack tracks in the Midwest and
mm-hmm.
maybe in Indianapolis or Atlanta or something.
Right.
But they've learned to groom and to have and prepare the tracks better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of it's because it's a single day format. You know, the last four
right.
or 5 years. Where they used to
good
run,
point. Yeah,
they used
less,
to run
less
practice,
time. Yeah.
less time on the track, but they spend a little more time grooming, and they've learned to, we might have a corner or two that's real slippery,
mm-hmm.
but we have a lot less of those really baked Anaheim style tracks,
yeah.
or, and also we have one less Anaheim. Again, like even Las Vegas is probably by far the most extreme, but,
yep.
but other than that, we have a lot less, so people are running a lot more intermediate style
mm-hmm.
tires than the days where we spent so much time developing hard pack tires, yet in the consumer's world, you know, it's only a 10% or so
of
the market share.
Right.
But in the professional Supercross, it used to be the majority of the tires were hard pack Supercross tires. But anymore,
it's
shifted more towards intermediates.
What's the one piece of advice you'd give people listening to this about their tires? Air pressure, setup, compound, model of tire. One piece of advice that you see people, you know, that you would give somebody, local racer, you know, buying Dunlops?
Well, for one, check your tire pressure a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, tire, you know, tubes, particularly natural rubber tubes, you know, they do a lot of leak down. I mean, eventually and don't be afraid to try different tire pressures. When you were talking about the 90-100s versus,
mm-hmm.
you know, the front tires, the 90s were very popular, and as they go more and more, then we've been developing some 90-90s, which is kind of like an in-betweener,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, some 80-100s, you know, 80-100 tends to turn a little more quickly, but it has less footprint on
yeah.
the ground. You know, I had one of our top riders here. He's a 9100 guy, yep. and he likes 9100s a lot. And he asked, hey, listen, it's super tacky in the track here at Bercy. You know, maybe kind of getting a little bit too much stick in the front. Is mm-hmm. there, you know, do you have any 8100 tires? I said, well, I didn't bring any tires here. You guys,
yeah. you know. They like, I'm here for JT.
Yeah, yeah. Well, also, but they also knew, we told them way in advance, yeah. we're not going to have tire service here. And so they knew to ship their own bikes and yeah. parts and tires. But I just said, hey, you increase the tire pressure.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
increase the tire pressure. It won't squish down as much. You won't have as heavy of a feel. Mm-hmm. It'll round out the carcass a little bit. So,
did it work better?
Yeah. yeah. And he was like, oh, okay. I didn't even think about that. And so don't be afraid to try and try different setups. And the other thing is, too, I think for us, we have a really good, that MX-71 front tire is a really good tire. It works much further into the intermediate. It's a hard pack design, but it works further into the intermediate than any of our other previous hard pack tires. And so that's why a guy like a Ryan Dungey will run that. I mean, he ran it the Motocross of Nations when it was raining even, yeah. because he knows it works well even in intermediate conditions.
Right.
And I would say mix. Don't be afraid to mix and match. We have a lot of guys, even at the pro level, who run like an MX-51 rear intermediate, mm-hmm. and they'll run the 71 front. So don't be afraid to mix and match between hard, you know, different. You know, right, you don't right. have to always run an intermediate or a hard pack.
Right.
You know, you can have a mix and match front and rear.
Cool. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Thank you.